SMQBs, episode 26. We are back, minus Milk, who has more important things to do tonight. Good luck, Milk. We have an NBA Finals wrap-up, a very sincere apology from House to one Finals MVP. We talk new teams and team names, the mess that is the Tokyo Olympics, SEC football, MLB trade deadline, and of course, the punchable face of the week. Enjoy the episode. It's fun. Leave us a 5-star review if you could, and we'll see you soon.
Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're 5 attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. From Dallas, Texas, Ryan Pope. Michael Rooster Phelan from Richmond, Virginia. Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa. Toby House Milrod from Philadelphia. Chris Bison Nace from DC.
SMQBs, 26th episode. We made it past that 25 mark. It's all downhill from now on, guys. Hey, House, if your Phillies can't take 4 out of 4 from the Nats this week, then you guys probably ought to just have John Lester playing quarterback for you next year, because we are down and out and you should be steamrolling the Nats. We're
putting a nail in the coffin of the Expos, and by the end of this week, Deshaun Watson will be a Philadelphia Eagle.
Whoa, you heard it here.
Oh, there you go.
Wow.
Breaking news.
Wow.
Slap in the face to all the women fans of Philadelphia.
Yeah, so you feel good about Jalen Hurts as well.
Yeah, that's a good confidence for Jalen.
Yeah.
I'm just reporting news.
Is that an insider source?
It's an insider source.
The Texans just announced they're open to trading him.
Well, that's...
They
just announced, that's in Rooster World, that they just announced. It was actually like 24 hours ago that they actually announced it.
So I suppose you all know that Rodgers and the Packers reached a deal, a 1-year deal.
Last dance. Today.
Last dance, yeah.
Yeah.
Last dance.
All right. Breaking news right here.
It was an interesting contract. It was weird. They deliberately set it up so that he can get out after this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because everybody's sick of this crap, right? I mean, everyone on every side is sick of it.
Yeah.
Well, it also gives them a chance to hold on to Davante Adams. They needed to do something, and they weren't going to keep Rodgers for more than a year.
Right. Right. Well, hey, Rooster, you may not have heard, but Milwaukee Bucks won the NBA championship a couple nights ago. Breaking news.
Bucks and six. Hey, before we get started on the Bucks, I just want to give a shout out and send SMQB best wishes to our number one Bucks fan, Jay Urban. Bison, since you correctly called the Bucks early on, I am going to cede the conversation about the NBA Finals to you. Take it over, baby.
Well, I wasn't going to mention the fact tonight that I correctly called this, or at least said keep an eye on the Bucks months ago. But
I think you said
you mean like you have space. The last 3 or 4 episodes?
Yeah, I wasn't going to do it this time. But me and Barkley, we stuck with our guys and we stayed loyal to them. I think the thing you have to talk about is the Greek Freak, right? Where does that Game 6 stand as far as all-time great finals games? I mean, the statistics are unbelievable, right? I mean, we know he had 50 points, but you look at all the other, like the deep stats that the real stat heads go into. I mean, what was it like? Let me see these. He had like 42% usage, but like 52% of the points for the team. I mean, just unbelievable. 17 of 19 from the line, 15 shots in the paint, hit a 3. He had 23.8% of their points at the free throw line in the game. Most of that from Giannis. I mean, just a completely dominant effort by the MVP. You got to put it up there as one of the all-time great games, right?
Absolutely. 50-14-5 in a closeout game is monstrous. Is he the best player in the NBA right now?
Boy, I mean,
hard time arguing with that.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, right? I mean, he got it done. And, you know, Durant, a couple series ago, everyone was saying Durant was. And you know, you can make the argument that one big toe away from being, you know, claiming to be the best. But, you know, Durant's never got it done when it's been on his shoulders, right?
Not only that, but, you know, I mean, we were all pretty high on DeAndre Ayton. And Giannis made him look like a child.
Yeah,
in the last couple of games. I mean, he just abused him.
I'm going to ask our production crew back in the van to do something very special right now. I'm going to ask them to cue up some very unusual music that's rarely heard, maybe Chariots of Fire, something else, because I'm going to announce an apology. I have spent greater than a year referring to Giannis Antetokounmpo as the Greek yogurt. And I have to apologize to Giannis. That game was up there with, you know, when you look at great, great performances in the ultimate game to win the championship, where one single player puts an entire team on his back. You know, I think about that famous game in hockey when Messier put the entire team on his back. This game, Giannis, by the way, Drew Holiday not really showing up that night. He was great the entire series.
Not offensively.
And neither did Middleton.
Middleton wasn't really there. Giannis said, and here's one of the other things that one of my kids remind me, you know, Giannis made a choice. He made a choice in this playoffs about winning now when he had the chance, saying, I'm going to take a risk on my health, but I've got a chance to win now. You know, people forget that, you know, six games earlier than that, he was coming off the floor, and we didn't know whether Giannis was going to play again at all. There was definitely a little bit of structural issue, question mark, to his knee. I don't know what the story was with Kawhi. Did Kawhi make the choice to say, I'm preserving the future and not playing this year? I think you have to give credit to Giannis for his courage to play, for his performance in that game. And if you listen to some of his quotes about his humility and how he feels about the game of basketball, is really, really impressive. I apologize, Giannis. You're a true champion.
So, House, though, I want to go back to you on that, though, because, you know, the comparison all year was Giannis and Embiid, right? And so what's the sort of – is there a reaction in Philly to where – to how this season shaped up? And when you look at Embiid, who, you know, people thought – should be the MVP and, you know, was better than Giannis and all this stuff. I mean, is there a reaction to that comparison?
I don't want to take, again, Giannis is deserving of all the accolades he gets, but I still don't want to forget what Pope laid out for us in these NBA playoffs and how this whole thing played out. Giannis never faced the best opponent, the best version of the opponents that he could have. He didn't with the Nets. He didn't with the Hawks. Embiid faced the best version of Trae Young, and he had very poor compliments around him. I don't know that you make, I mean, Embiid is a totally dominant figure in the NBA. I don't know if it's an apples to apples comparison. Giannis deserves it all. He deserves the MVP of the playoffs. He deserves the championship. But I think we can't forget that the Suns did not face AD. They did not face Kawhi. And I think Pope is right. I think when we go to next year, I'm very curious to see where the Suns and Bucks go if they face fully healthy teams with those stars.
Well, you haven't had an NBA champion like the Bucks since the 2011 Mavs, where you have one player, Dirk, for the Mavs. You have one player, Giannis, for the Bucks, and you have a good supporting cast, not a great supporting cast, and you have no other true superstars to lift them. So you know, the Mavs imploded after 2011, and a lot of that was with free agency, and they had to blow up the team. Mark Cuban, you know, didn't have much of a choice there. But the Bucks, it will be really interesting watching them next year and the year after. Are they able to get another superstar? Or are they going to continue to make a run with the roster they have now? Because I would submit the roster they have now will not get back to the Eastern Finals next year or any other year.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's you know, I mean, the other side of it is you could say that they learned how to win, right? I mean, that's the other side. They could come out and have all that talent that we thought they had the last couple of years, you know, that we were sort of waiting for them to get to the finals and win one. Maybe now they've unlocked it though, right? The Bucks, and maybe right. Now they've got that confidence and they right. go out and they're just a totally different team.
Right. And they have a cohesive team. Whereas the Nets have three aging injury prone stars. You just never know if they're ever going to be healthy at the same time. The Sixers are in a bit of disarray with the Ben Simmons issue.
They'll fix that.
The Hawks are up and coming. The Hawks are up and coming for sure.
They didn't even have DeAndre Hunter in the playoffs.
If they get Hunter healthy, they could give everyone trouble. And look out for the Knicks if they pick up a good free agent.
Well, look, and the same can be said for the Suns. CP3 probably won't be there next year. We don't know what they're going to look like, and the West is just going to get stronger. Will the Suns be favored to come back to the finals? I would say they would not be favored. Maybe DeAndre matures a little bit more. Obviously, Booker has a little bit of way to go. They're two potential superstars. Maybe you get a third piece. I don't know. They might have a longer upside than the Bucks long term.
I think the good news about this NBA Finals, you know, it's been some 40, 50 years consecutively from, you know, Magic and Kareem and Bird to Jordan to LeBron. And maybe we're in the twilight of LeBron's career, but what's pretty clear from this playoffs, from this finals, from the superstars that emerged in this NBA playoffs is the NBA is in very good hands with really a collective cast of characters, not one superstar like a LeBron that dominates the NBA. I think there's a lot of smaller stars in the NBA that will carry it forward with a great product.
Right. Like I said earlier in the year, new is good. We've got new teams in. It's good for the fans. It's good for the fan bases in those cities. It's exciting to see some of these young teams progress.
The other thing I was going to say though about just the NBA in general is now in a lot of ways the fun starts, right? The way the NBA with the way players move around. I mean, if Bradley Beal ends up in a Lakers uniform, you know, that we're not going to be talking about all these new teams and these different teams in it, right? I mean, the things can change,
right?
With free agency in the NBA, and then of course, you know, you don't even know then when the teams are set.
New deals every day.
You don't even know what that. Who's that? Is that you hear that?
Yeah, it was special audience guest.
Is that Milk trying to come in?
Maybe. But you know, even then, the way these buyouts work and everything in the NBA, you never know what a real team is.
Right.
What team's going to emerge? So it's hard to say that there's good young teams out there because of the way players move around so much.
Yep. Well, let's talk about some other new things in sports. The NHL has their 32nd team beginning play next season, the Seattle Kraken. The Kraken had their expansion draft on July 21st and picked 30 players, unprotected players from other teams, except Vegas didn't have to participate. And their GM kind of played a little version of Moneyball, it seems to me. Very conservative expansion draft. Looked like the goal was to maintain plenty of cap space to pick up some free agents. They passed over some expensive available players like the Canadiens goalie, Carey Price. Your team, the Flyers, left James Van Riemsdyk unprotected. Good goal scorer. They chose not to take him because he was making a lot of money. And they picked a bunch of, you know, like young, high character, high energy players who in a ceremony that was really kind of cool for Seattle. They had all the past stars, Sean Kemp, Sue Bird, Gary Payton, Marshawn Lynch, helping to announce these selections. And you know, they really did not pick many players who were making a lot of money. The only ones who were making big time bucks were Mark Giordano from the Flames, the defenseman making $6.75 million a year. Jordan Eberle from the Islanders, a forward making $5.5 million a year. And from Milk's team, the Lightning, Yanni Gourde, a little over $5 million a year. For the most part, most of the guys they picked were making six figures. And so they're young. They have lots of cap space. Let's see what they do with the free agent market. They did pick up a young goalie, and they had this weird 72-hour pre-expansion draft free agency window where they signed Chris Driedger, a goalie, and a couple of really good defensemen, Adam Larson and Jamie Oleksiak. So, you know, they seem to be following the Golden Knights model. And let's see what they do in free agency. But it's exciting to see a Seattle get a major team again. I'm interested in seeing how they do. Go Kraken.
If an NHL franchise falls in the Pacific Northwest and no one's there to hear it, to make a sound, does anybody care about this?
Well, look, Seattle is a great sports town.
Great sports town. They support their teams. But here's what's really important to me, Rooster, because I'm all about the uni in sports. So behind you is the –
There we go. Check it out.
Kraken Uni. What's your take on it, Rooster?
Looks like the Seattle Mariners.
It's not very original. I mean, you see it's got a little anchor up there on the – I still think the Whalers are the all-time best. In fact, my goal one day is to be able to afford to bring the Whalers back to Connecticut as an owner.
I love it.
With all of you working concessions.
No, we'll be play-by-play.
Yeah, that's
underwhelmed by the jersey.
That's an uninspired logo, I have to say.
It looks like a dragon. I'm not sure what a Kraken looks like, but it doesn't look like a Kraken.
Yeah, it would be more like the Loch Ness Monster, you know? That's just looks like an S with a tongue.
Now, I wasn't going to say it looked like an S, but that's okay.
So speaking of new, we have an old baseball team that finally did the right thing. Who wants to talk about the Guardians?
Guardians.
Apparently there's been a run on good names for teams. Huh?
Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, coming from Washington football team, I'm not sure you have much room to talk.
No, I'm not.
The Guardians is the new name for Cleveland, formerly known as the Indians. It is part of, you know, an effort by major league franchises to come more into popular culture where we are now. And that is that we don't accept names like the Indians. I think that, the Guardians is an interesting choice. I looked into it, and there actually is some statues that are in Cleveland. They call them the Guardian statues, and I think there's
the traffic guardians.
Yeah, there's a bridge going into Cleveland, I guess, over one of the rivers, and that is, I guess, where they get their name from. You know, it's not the worst name they could have come up with. I would have loved to see them try to incorporate Rock and Roll Hall of Fame into their name. I don't know, the Rock and Rollers or, you know, the
Rockers.
Hall of Famers, the Rockers. I don't know if people would think the Rockers are for Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't know, but we'll see. You know, their house has their logo behind him. It looks like, you know, maybe a delivery service.
How about Cleveland Rocks? That looks like Wingstop or something.
I
How about Hello Cleveland? And just instead of having Cleveland first, have Hello Cleveland. And that's your name. I love
that. Whoa, outside the box there,
Pope. I'm in favor of this name. I'm one of the few that like it. The logo is these wings that are part of the Art Deco statues that are these guardians of these traffic guardians that you're talking about. What I think is cool, because I love when cities kind of have this civic pride where they rally around in a very provincial way around their team. Cleveland is like that with their teams. And this is one of these names that over time, it's going to be like, if you know, you know. Like, you'd have to be from Cleveland to understand right. what the Guardians means to them. I don't think they were doing this to please the people in Dallas, Richmond, D.C., Miami, and Philadelphia. I think they were doing this to please the people in the 216.
Yeah. Listen, all you have to do is listen to a Cleveland a Cleveland Guardians game on the radio to see how local this team is.
Yeah.
Their announcers are such homers. It's hysterical. It really is. I have lots of friends in Cleveland. I went to college in Ohio, and I would love to see them, either the Browns or the Guardians, do something for them, because that poor city has just suffered throughout the 80s, 90s. Yeah, that's right. That's right. But they're the long-suffering Indians and Browns fans deserve some relief.
Well, a little-known SMQB's history, too, is you could actually track the origins of the SMQBs to a Cleveland formerly known as Indians. Another letdown, right? Wasn't it True. A Cubs?
Yeah.
Indians World Series game where the
seven.
SMQB
game seven.
was sort of solidified. So they're
certainly the text group was.
Yeah, that they are part of the lore of the SMQB's legend.
I love giving our listeners just a little bit of lore every now and then, just to kind of keep them interested.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Let's move on. Since some of us have places to go tonight.
we do. That's hot.
Toby House, talk about the craziness that is the Olympics right now.
You know what? In the weather forecast for tomorrow, if you can believe this, for Tokyo, Japan, is literally a typhoon. And as long as no one gets hurt, I think this typhoon could do the Olympics a great favor of washing the whole goddamn thing away. You know what? I really bristled at the suggestion last week from Pope that this was going to be the no Olympics. And unfortunately, Pope was like right on. And you were too, Rooster. It's been a relatively starless, bland, filled with all kinds of problems. It's so weird to turn on the television and see these empty stands. It is not befitting of the Olympics. You've got all kinds of just horrible things that have been going down. Between the Shikari Richardson and sending home a real superstar for smoking pot to the empty stands, there's, you know, an Algerian judo contestant that refused to have a match against an Israeli over Jeez. Political reasons. So they had to send.
Can't believe that still goes on.
Still goes on. So they had to send the Algerian home. There's a handball team that the uniform in the handball is very short, basically bikini bottoms for the women's handball. And one of the teams does not want to wear them because they feel like they're being sexualized. So the IOC is fining this team for not wearing short enough shorts. And the outrage is so great that the performer Pink has agreed to pay the fines to now make, you know, a whole thing out of this.
I mean, let's face it. Those bikini bottoms totally objectify the handball team, the beach volleyball team.
Yeah, Norway fine for having
It's like two threads shy of a thong.
And for the U.S., It's been a total mess. Complete embarrassment losing the first time in some 20-something years in the Olympics with some stars on the court, with NBA champions on the court, Kevin Durant, with the best free agent, Damian Lillard, with Drew Holiday, you know, top players. It's not like we were putting Drek out there on the floor and they lost to France. They now have to beat back-to-back, I think it's Iran and Czech Republic to make it in the quarterfinals.
No margin of error.
Did anyone watch that game?
No.
I watched a fair amount of it. You know, I was with my dad in the hospital, and there was zero energy on the U.S. team. France was diving for loose balls, saving balls to their guys, and hitting threes with the on the saved ball, while the U.S. stood there watching. And there was one play where some guy from France put up an air ball, and five guys on the U.S. just watched this air ball, which clearly was not going to hit rim, and did nothing. So another guy from France just caught it and dunked it. I mean, we are so lethargic and right now poorly coached, which pains me to say because I love Greg Popovich. I mean, he's like on my list of most interesting people I'd like to have dinner with. Well, but I mean, he's trying to run the Spurs offense with a bunch of guys who haven't played together before. You can't do that.
Look, you can say all of that, but the bottom line is that the U.S. led with 3.5 minutes left by 7 points. You know how they finished the game? They didn't score again. They got outscored 16-2 to finish the game. They were 0 for their last 9 shots, including
three
three-pointers on one possession where they had the possession for like 21 seconds.
Durant couldn't hit a three-pointer to save his life in that game.
Beyond
the complete collapse. I mean, who would have taken France over the U.S. with 3.5 minutes plus 7? You know how we look at ESPN probability of win? Probably U.S. was 99.7% to win that game.
But the interesting thing
for the Americans,
the interesting thing about France, first of all, France has three or four legit NBA players on their team. But the interesting thing was Rudy Gobert was playing like he was an offensive machine. He played a completely different game than he plays for the Jazz. They threw him the ball, and he did spin moves and everything else to get to the hoop. I don't know why he doesn't do that for the Jazz, because he actually looked like a pretty proficient low post player.
Well, speaking of U.S. humiliation, it's really, despite them being in second place in the overall medal count right now, again, it's been a very underwhelming start. The superstar Katie Ledecky lost her first race, took silver in the 400 meter free. The women's gymnastics team, although Simone Biles is in the lead, they actually right now in the preliminaries are behind Russia, which was a surprise. The men's gymnastics team in the overall competition was left off the medal stand altogether. The women's soccer team, the storied soccer team that was introduced last week, Juggernaut, lost 3-0 to Sweden. I mean, overall, there's been just a really flat performance. In the medals, it's right now China 18, USA 14, Japan 13, and Russia 12. For me so far, and what little I've seen, actually the most compelling part of the Olympics actually has been
badminton.
The badminton was pretty fascinating, and I can't wait to hear Bison's commentary on that. But the new sports, the skateboarding, the surfing, they were fun to watch. Japan brought home in the street skateboarding winners on both the men's and women's side. There's been a great performance by Pope's favorite basketball team. Pope has now added another team to his favorite, the country of Slovenia.
Damn right I have. Luka. Ale Luka.
Look out for Slovenia and Luka. Look out for Australia and men's basketball. But overall, I don't know. I think it's closer to Pope's no Olympics than being the
Olympics. It sounds like you were you're promoting the X Games right there when you're talking about skateboarding and surfing. We're talking about the fucking Olympics.
Yeah.
I'm going to disagree with all you guys. I think you guys all have a bad attitude about this. Really. First of all, let's get off the homerism USA, USA, USA. Okay. You can root for the home team. That's fine. But the joy of the Olympics is watching the competition of these athletes. I mean, if you watch the Taekwondo, and it is an American who won the gold, the first Taekwondo gold for an American ever, the just sheer joy that this woman showed in winning.
There is no joy in Tokyo.
If you watch the,
about to be muddy too,
the triathlon, these guys, I mean, these guys run, they do this triathlon, and I never really get the exact distances, but I think the Olympic distance try is like a mile swim. I think it's like 26 miles on the bike and then a 10K. The guys who won it finished. His last mile run was 4:40 pace after doing the rest of that. They crossed the finish line, and these athletes collapse from sheer exhaustion. That's how hard they're working. I mean, same thing with the coach from the Australian coach with the swimmer who beat Katie Ledecky, local hometown DC girl. You know, the coach from Australia was just beside herself. I mean, I watched some of the weightlifting competition.
Himself, this he is was like ridiculous. Pure,
this is the definition of the agony of defeat, the what is it, the joy of victory,
the thrill, I mean, of victory.
It's just to watch the emotion, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. It's, I don't know. I just think you root for the athletes. If you start, you know, rooting too hard for the home country, you're going to be disappointed, especially in basketball. Just enjoy the competition. It's enjoy true. The stories and the
victories. There are compelling stories.
It's true, but I'm with Pope on some of these new sports. Call me old.
You're old. We've done that many times.
Skateboard. I mean, look, if you're going to have skateboarding, at least make it, you know, legitimate and authentic. I mean, they've got these skateboarders all dressed up in these fancy little polo shirts and nice little athletic shorts. These dudes ought to be wearing their baggy, you know, shorts and green hair, and they should be, you know, chased by some mall cop on a Segway because they've just stolen some gum from something at the mall. I mean, pretty much that's the skateboarding population. The first, am I right, Pope? Am I right?
Is that the first Paul Blart reference?
Yes. Oh boy,
mall cop.
I mean, come on. How many like preppy skateboarders have you ever seen in your life?
You know, if Caitlyn Jenner could have had the skateboard, maybe she could have won that as well as the decathlon in 1970.
Oh my God.
That would be they.
If you watch any of the skateboarding, you would see that what these skateboarders were doing were truly athletic feats. There was plenty of ink all over their bodies.
X Games.
No. Skateboarding belongs, and some of the athletic stuff that they're doing on the surfboards is insane. Good sports. Okay. Anyway, right. Enjoy the rest.
I was trying to get an update on badminton, though. I was trying to give an update on badminton, but I got to tell you, I'm looking at the results.
How'd your guy do?
I don't have a fucking clue how to.
He can't even remember the name of this guy. Really, he doesn't even remember the name of this guy.
I don't even know what these things mean. I mean, Inlander, group Dan play, it's finished. There's winners. I can't understand. It looks like they're playing every 20 minutes or something. I don't know. I'm sure that the Japanese are giving the Chinese a run for their money. That's all I know.
Oh my God.
That's a solid update. Thanks, Bison.
Yeah.
All right. Strong.
Moving right along.
Better Olympics update than that right there for the four of us.
That's right. Pope, moving right along to your favorite category, the SEC. What is going on with SEC expansion?
Wow, the earthquake that you heard last week and felt was the people down at Texas A&M realizing they've been snookered once again. They were promised years ago that they would be the only Texas team in the SEC, and that was part of their bait to jump to the SEC. And at the time, there was some discussion about Texas and Oklahoma going to the Pac-12 and forming a super conference back before the Big 12 formation. Of course, it's not Big 12, it's Big 10, and it's about to be the little eight, because Texas and OU have been negotiating for 6 months, unbeknownst to really anyone, and certainly unbeknownst to the Aggies, an exit from the Big 12 to the SEC to form the first, but not the last, super conference in our new NCAA NIL era that we're about to enter. Speaking of that, did you see where Bryce Young has already signed up about $1 million worth of endorsements?
Yeah. Well, that's Alabama just quarterback. Genius by Saban to even be throwing that out there. It's right. Like the biggest recruiting tool he has.
Yeah. You think? So, hey,
BP, Texas, before you go on, let me ask you this. Do you think this is legitimate end goal or trying to get leverage against the Big Ten?
Against the Big Ten or Big 12?
Big 12, sorry.
So Texas and Oklahoma informed the Big 12 today that they're leaving, that they're not renewing their contract in 2025, and now it's all about negotiating the exit. My guess is that there'll be a buyout. I wouldn't be surprised to see ESPN throw in part of the buyout money, because they're going to make a gajillion dollars off this new conference. The rights to Longhorn Network, et cetera, are going to be all folded in. My guess is, you know, maybe optimistically you see 2022-23 season, more likely maybe 23-24. But it's a done deal. And, you know, the shockwaves felt around the other conferences are, you know, what happens to the Big 12 lesser teams now, like Baylor, Texas Tech,
AAC,
Oklahoma
baby
State,
AAC, baby.
Is the AAC going to pick them up? There's some talk about creating another conference with SMU and TCU and Rice and putting them into the little Big Eight. Pac-12 might, you know, want to pick up some teams. Kansas might go to the Big Ten. West Virginia might go to the ACC. I think what you're going to see in the next 6 months or so is a consolidation into four super conferences, and there'll be 64 teams. And if you're not in one of those super conferences, you're going to be left out in the cold. Maybe there'll be, you know, a fifth conference that gets an automatic bid into the playoffs when they go to 12. I don't know. But from an SEC standpoint, I was doing a little research because a lot of people are like, well, how's that going to impact on the divisions? Because right now, Alabama and Auburn are in the West. But if you put Texas and Oklahoma, it slots in pretty easy. Alabama, Auburn would go to the East. Texas, Oklahoma would go to the West. And so, you know, Alabama and Auburn would be in the conference with Florida. Milk, we're coming for you. And Vanderbilt, Kentucky, all those guys, Tennessee, and then Texas OU would be naturally in the conference with Arkansas, Missouri, and A&M. People in Texas are excited because they're going to see A&M in Texas again. They haven't played in years once A&M jumped to the SEC. So I think this was inevitable. I think if you really look back on it, I think Sarkisian probably had a heads up that Texas was going to go to the SEC when he took his head coaching job at Texas, that was the ultimate place where he would be. And it made him more attractive to Texas, obviously, since he had experience coaching in the SEC.
So do we think this is good or bad for college football?
Well, I want to ask a bigger question, though. What does this do to all the other sports? Because college football has ruined so many, you know, ruined basketball, some of the best basketball conferences. Mm-hmm.
The Big East.
It's football has just really, it's too important. It's too big. What does this do for the other sports at these schools? And not necessarily just the Texas and Oklahoma move, but looking forward to this consolidation, what does this do for student athletes in those conferences?
Well, you heard NCAA say last week that they, you know, feel like it's out of control and that the NCAA is on its last legs. I think
you that know, might not be a bad thing.
It may not be, but
that's a corrupt organization.
So yeah. What is going to happen to the schools that don't, you know, make the final cut for the 64? And you know, what about basketball, Bison? You're absolutely right, because if you look at the Big 12. Defending national champion, Baylor, perennial national champion candidate, Kansas, up and coming until, of course, again, start looking at this. Chris Beard jumped from Tech to Texas, probably had a heads up that Texas was jumping to the SEC. So, you know, that's a great conference in basketball, arguably, you know, the best conference now on paper. What's going to happen to it? I could see how Kansas could go to the Big Ten to really fortify the Big Ten from basketball. They don't care about football.
Question for you, though, along these lines, because I do think it's going to ruin college sports, these super conferences, and I'm looking forward to Milk's return next week. We're giving a shout out to our buddy Milk, who's not on the broadcast this week because he's taking the bar tomorrow, and I don't mean bringing home all the drinks.
Another lawyer.
But listen, yes.
taking the Florida bar exam, which is a tough one.
Go Milk. But I know he's going to have a lot to say about the college sports thing next week. But besides the money piece, what does this do for competition? Like in a conference like that, particularly let's talk about football. Like you bring over Texas and OU, what happens to teams like Vandy and Kentucky and Mississippi State? Like, is there really room for all these teams in the SEC to even compete at that level?
There's a lot of money out there, and their fan base does not want them going anywhere. They love the natural rivalries. You know, every now and then you'll have an Ole Miss, Mississippi State, even a Vandy punch through and, you know, get into the upper tier. But, you know, with the big uglies, as Keith Jackson used to say, you've got Alabama, Texas, OU, LSU. I mean, just think, and if you look at the national champions of the college football playoffs in the last 10 years, I mean, it's dominated, 8 out of 10 by, other than Clemson, by SEC. So, they're not going to go anywhere. I don't see Vandy wanting to leave. I don't see Kentucky wanting to leave. In basketball, Kentucky is still a perennial national candidate.
And Vandy in baseball.
Sure.
But, you know, I kind of agree with House. And I look at it from a young fan's perspective. You mentioned regional rivalries. That's starting to fade because of these consolidations, not as much in the SEC, but like the idea that Boston College is in the ACC is, you know, just illustrates Bison's point, how the Big East has been destroyed by this whole trend. When I was a kid, you could drive, get in the car and drive to see every school in the Big East, where I grew up. And, you know, we could go to Boston College. We could go to New York or UConn. And now if you're living in Massachusetts and you follow Boston College, there you have to drive down to Virginia and South Carolina and North Carolina to see most of their games.
It's just, how do you think the people in Morgantown, West Virginia feel? got to drive to Kansas and Texas. Right.
Yeah, but I mean, and Oklahoma. You know, they're in a geographically difficult place. There aren't a lot of schools near Morgantown. It's all surrounded by mountains.
You think you get to a point where there are football conferences and then there are conferences for other sports?
I do.
I don't know. Look at Notre Dame. What is Notre Dame going to do? The ACC is pushing really hard to bring Notre Dame in full time for football. I mean, but Notre Dame right now, they played ACC football.
So the Atlantic Coast Conference is going to have a school from Indiana. I mean, that's my point. It has destroyed the regional, local feel of college sports, and it's now professional sports basically.
Yeah.
This is the backlash, ironically, of this Supreme Court opinion that's allowing the players to get paid. Again, we'll talk more about this next week, but I was talking to my kids yesterday in the car about a 3-star athlete comes to my school, Tulane, and says, I want to play football. And the coach says, oh, you'll be able to start. You'll be a star in the AAC. We send we send kids to the NFL. And come play for Tulane. Then this three-star kid says, well, I think I'll take a trip and I'll go over to Alabama. And Saban says, look, I'm going to tell you straight up. You're going to win four national champions. You'll probably never leave the bench, but by joining our team, you'll get endorsements and you can probably pick up a couple $100,000. Where do you think that kid's going to go? There's no question about it. The money, they're going to follow the money. And these mid-major schools are going to get crushed by these super conferences and the money. And I think in the end, it's going to be an irony because for the kids, maybe they won't be used the way they were in the past. But for the fans, if you're not a fan of one of these super conference teams, you're screwed.
All right. Real quick, last point, and I'll put my SMU hat on for a second because SMU's had an amazing recruiting year. They've got their first five-star. They got a couple four-stars, had a three-star yesterday. What are they going to be telling these guys now about where their ultimate destination is going to be as a conference, as a school, and as a competitive? Are they going to be able to compete for national champions in a Power Five conference with the AAC, getting in there? I don't know. Just like Tulane, just like some of these other lesser schools, it is an exciting time if you are a big fan of college football, SEC. But it is, I guess, treacherous for all of the other schools. And I don't know if we know the path forward.
Okay, so we're recording this on Monday, the 26th, and in 4 days is the Major League Baseball trade deadline. Bison, there hasn't been a whole lot of action. We've had one big trade, but what do you see any blockbusters coming down the pike?
Well, I think the thing that's going to be interesting to watch is some of the teams that we thought could be competitive are going to be dismantling, right? Like the Cubs, the Twins, and I think the Nationals at this point. After the Nats got swept by the Orioles this weekend, that was pretty much the
nail in the coffin.
Nail in the coffin for that. But you're going to have guys like Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo who could get moved from the Cubs. Did you think that was a possibility a couple of years ago when they won the World Series?
No.
How about Max Scherzer or Trey Turner from the Nats going? Or Josh Donaldson leaving the Twins, or Byron Buxton leaving the Twins. I mean, those are teams that Nelson Cruz. Those are teams that were built to compete this year and went into the season thinking they were going to. And a lot of people thought those teams, did have a chance. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see some of the older teams whose windows have closed and what's going to happen. And like I said, including my Nats, which I think we're going to see. I think there's going to be a lot of action with the Nats. The Nats got their World Series. Their farm system is anemic, to say the least. And so, a lot of people think it'd be kind of crazy not to just trade everyone. I mean, obviously a guy like Soto is not going anywhere. And I would even think Trey Turner's probably not touchable either, but just about everybody else on that team. But for the fact that there's a lot of injuries on the Nats. So
I get rid of Scherzer though. What's the thinking there?
Well, his contract's up. What is he? 37 years old. I mean, how long is he? He's having a great year, but if it's time to reload, it's time to reload, right? Go out and get some assets.
So does that mean you're finally going to become a Yankees fan?
Why would I become a Yankees fan?
When Max signs with the Yankees, obviously.
Oh, God.
Listen, don't be surprised to see Scherzer get traded and then come back to Washington at the end of the season on a new deal. The Nats would re-sign him if he doesn't do some sort of a sign-and-trade extension deal. So I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think to the Nats' credit, they see reality and they react. The Yankees are pretty much in the same boat. We're not making the playoffs at this rate, but they have the perpetual blinders on where their thing is, look, we are always going to have a competitive team on the field for the fans. And so there's not a lot of rebuilding, ever in their plans, which I think is a mistake this year because the way baseball is going, having a bunch of slow right-handed hitters who slug and no speed, is a recipe for disaster. You know, when the Yankees started to win some games recently, it seemed like Boone finally grew a pair and said to some of his players, look, there's a thing called bunting. There's a thing called hitting and running. There's a thing called stealing bases. And they started to win some games, and then they immediately went away from it. They're a team of dinosaurs. They need to get rid of Boone and restock their players, but they're not going to do it. I think we're in trouble.
Rooster,
I think Nats are doing the right thing.
Are you throwing the towel in on this year? Because you guys are 3.5 back from the last wild card.
No, we could. We need
that's nothing.
We need a relief pitcher and a starting pitcher. We need a shortstop. I mean, we need a lot of big pieces. We're not, but of course, the Yankees could go out and get all of that at the trade deadline. So no, I'm not writing off the year. I'm saying if they don't do something big at the trade deadline, they're done.
This is my problem with baseball and 162 games. I don't like that half the league is basically not trying after July 30th. I just don't like that in a sport. This is basically down to, you know, half a dozen teams in each league really going for it. And the rest are just like, you know, for the fans, if you're a New York fan, if you're a Washington fan, whoever's going to be the sellers, like, what's the point of showing up to the stadium? That's not good for sport.
Well, really, it's almost 2/3 of MLB is eliminated after trade deadline. I mean, if you look at the standings, there are just very few teams that could potentially leap up into a wild card.
So we're not doing a Ted Lasso segment for episode 26, but did anyone watch the season premiere?
Love it.
Yep. Well, the TV played in front of me Friday night after we had a
a wine gathering.
Victorian. And so I believe that the show did in fact cross my TV screen that evening, but I'm not
before I saw season 2, episode 1, I was working on this premise that maybe we just all loved that show because after a year of COVID, we just needed something that was, there was no cynicism and it was just all kindness and good. And that maybe after, a year of that, now that we're all cynical again, maybe it wouldn't be so good. I have to say it was just as good. Season 2, episode 1, I was very pleasantly pleased by just how good that damn series is. And I'm so glad that we have a segment.
I mean, it's the chemistry between all the actors is great. And Jason Sudeikis is, you know, that's the role of a lifetime. He'll forever be known as Ted Lasso. I don't know if you guys saw where, you know, he said something about if Diane Sawyer would ask him out, yes, please, is what he would say. And she tweeted and she said, I'm in. How about you, Ted Lasso? So he's a cultural hero right now. And that's boy, we sorely need that.
Well, enough of that nice shit. Let's
let's punch someone.
Let's punch someone in the face.
It's this week's punchable face.
In 2018, in response to the Larry Nassar horrific sexual abuse scandal where he was violating these young USA gymnasts, Congress created the U.S. Center for Safe Sport, who Congress put in charge of investigating misconduct in Olympic sports. It's been a massive failure. It's a disgrace to U.S. Olympic sports. And here's an example why. We have a guy on the U.S. fencing team with a history of sexual assault dating all the way back to his college days at Columbia, where he basically preyed on his female teammates and opponents in the after parties. And Columbia knew about it. They investigated it. They suspended him for a year. They found these to be credible allegations. Well, in May of this year, USA Fencing announced that on Instagram that this guy, Alan Hadzik, H-A-D-Z-I-C, was selected as the first alternate on the fencing team. So he was the number 4 in the world, and that made him the alternate. And immediately, the captains of the women's team, men on the U.S. fencing team, complained on Instagram in the comments section, basically calling out USA Fencing for supporting a predator. And so USA Fencing's response was to disable the comments on their Instagram page. So three of the women, all former teammates, had no choice but to file a complaint with Safe Sport, which is supposed to be protecting our athletes from the horrors of the, you know, of the gymnast past, of the Larry Nassar situation. Didn't work. The Safe Sport, which is a nonprofit created by Congress, they have the exclusive authority to investigate this. So now all of a sudden, USA Fencing, USA Olympics, they have no authority to handle misconduct investigations. And, you know, the women got nothing. They got basically put off. And so they also emailed the U.S. Olympic Committee, whose only response was to say, well, we've shared this matter with Safe Sport. And here, by the way, are some apps for mental health services and meditation. So finally, in June, Safe Sport got around to taking this seriously. And they did suspend Hadzik only because it was an ongoing investigation. I guess the policy is if there's an ongoing investigation, the athlete is suspended. But there is a provision in the statute that allows for arbitration. And so the Safe Sport arbitrator sided with this alleged sex abuser, lifted his suspension, which meant he could go to Tokyo, and gave him a condition that was called a safety plan, which was simply that he not fly on the same airplane as the rest of the team, and he sequester himself from the women on the team. And now he's there. He's there competing with women who felt like he abused them in college, and they know people he abused in college. And they filed these complaints, and they basically got a response that said, hey, maybe you should meditate. The Safe Sport turns out to be a joke. I'm sure, you know, Congress wasn't the best vehicle for this, but they need to revisit it and fix this. Because now we've got a team full of women fencers who are dealing with competing in the biggest event of their life and looking over their shoulder at some guy they think is a sexual predator. It's a travesty.
Well, thank God he didn't do weed. Jeez.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right. Unbelievable. Right.
Which is legal where she did it. Right. But instead, you know,
like a Propecia warning on him, right? Women stay away.
BuzzFeed did a big report on this, and they found that, you know, this isn't the only instance of Safe Sport dragging its feet and sort of taking the side of the entity. There was one woman who was actually being stalked by a referee in her sport, where the guy was following her from games to a bar and basically telling her, you know, you have to sleep with me or there's going to be repercussions, and being, you know, physically forceful with her. She files a complaint with Safe Sport, and it takes them nearly 2 years to get to the bottom of it. And in that time, you know, what seems to be commonplace is they complete their report without having interviewed any of the supposed witnesses. It's a joke. It's a complete joke. And it's a travesty, given the fact that it came to light because of all this abuse by Larry Nassar. I can't believe we have allowed this to happen again in this country. So punch in the face goes out to Congress for fucking this act up, USA Olympics, USA Fencing, and Safe Sport. Boom.
A lot of punches.
A lot of punches. Boom, boom, boom.
A lot of punches thrown. Important story. Good read, too.
Adds to the messiness of the Olympics.
Anybody got anything happy to say to finish up? Go milk.
Go milk. Yeah, go milk, man. Yeah.
Champ with a good, what's his name? The golfer yesterday.
Yeah.
With a pretty heroic finish, leading going was- to 15th and suffering from dehydration, looked like he was about to collapse. Standing over a putt that he ends up draining. Maybe I should start playing Dizzy. That might be the
thing
I could come up with.
That could help. And condolences to COVID-19 for having to spend the next 2 weeks with Bryson DeChambeau.
Yes. And also watch this space for a little Hungarian Grand Prix with Max and Lewis, part 2.
Oh, yeah, that's
gonna be good. I cannot wait for that race, guys.
That's going to be good.
Yeah, I think they should race this one in monster trucks.
Who's picking first? Who's picking first that week?
I think we're back up to the top. I think it's Pope is picking first next week. Good luck, Pope.
Good luck, Pope.
See.
Have a great week, guys.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, missed you guys. Good seeing you.
Take it easy.